Hey there, welcome to ABVA's member-centered event. Hang out with us today as we chat with members of the community addressing the challenges of the typical African creative.
Hi everyone, good evening. Good evening from Nigeria. It's 7 p.m. West African time and it's time for us to start our event for tonight, which is Hangouts with APVA. My name is Tolu Lope Kolade. You may know me as T-Code. I am the creative partner for ABVA. That's the African Association of Podcasters and Voice Actors. And I'll be hosting this event, which is titled Understanding Intellectual Property for Audio Creatives. It's a pleasure to be the host of this event. So I look forward to having a remarkable guest, one who is the president of the Intellectual Properties Lawyers Association of Nigeria, in person of Mr. Aluko, Folarin Aluko. Well, it's going to be a very interesting event as I can, you know, think about all the questions that I'll be asking and the things that we need to know as audio creatives, because as audio creatives, we have to understand the legal aspect of our business. So I'll encourage you right now, which I know you do have people who you think should listen to this kind of conversation, it'll be a good time to invite them to come up and get ready to be a part of this particular Twitter space. So share it with your friends, share it with voice of artists, share it with audio creatives, generally with podcasters. Let's understand intellectual property laws and how they affect audio creatives in Nigeria and in Africa, actually, because this is the African Association of Podcasters and Voice Artists. And for those who are new to what APVA is all about, we are, as the word or as the name says, an association for African podcasters, voice of artists, as well as poets, and specifically for spoken word artists. And what we do is to protect our interest, to amplify, to celebrate, you know, voice of artists, podcasters, and spoken word artists across the continent. And we've done this with a lot of events over the years. For instance, the APVA Awards, that's the ABVA Awards, which we've had two editions of that. And we also have events like this that happens within the month, right? Like the Hangout with ABVA, which is happening right now. And last week we held Pod Breaks Africa, which is just for podcasters to have conversations about what's happening in the podcast industry. So this is for voiceover artists, for podcasters, for everybody in the audio space. And we would be very, very, very happy to have more people joining as we discuss intellectual property for audio creative. Again, my name is T-Code. I'm a voiceover artist. I'm a podcaster, the host of the Everything Voice of Us podcast, The African Perspective, and I'm also the creative partner at APV ABVA. Well, it's 3 minutes past seven, and I think we can almost start the conversation because I'm looking at it. It's going to be a long conversation, not just because of the fact that myself and Mr. Folarin Aluko will be speaking, but also for the fact that you can ask questions. So what are the things that you really, really love to ask? I'll give you an example. If you were seated with a lawyer right now and you said, now I have this issue about, hypothetically speaking, right? I have this issue about this audio job that I did and I don't know how I can get it fixed. Wherever we did the contracts together, we're having some bottlenecks here and there. What do you think I can do? What are the steps I should take? So these are the kind of things we'll be discussing today. We want to have these questions answered by the experts. And who else? Who is the better person that can talk about this, if not the president of the Intellectual Properties Lawyers Association of Nigeria, in person of Mr. Folarin Aluko. So it's a pleasure to have him here. I am hoping to have him become a speaker right now. So, Mr. Folarin, if you can hear me, kindly request the mic and we'll make you a speaker and so we can start the meeting. Thanks to everybody that has joined so far. Gracie, thank you for being here. I can see Nkanta. Thank you for joining. Jay It's a pleasure to have you here. Christian, thank you, representing the VoiceOver Workshop. Thank you for being here. Egwautu, thank you for being here as well. Manuel and every other person. John, thank you. Even IPLAN is here. That's the Intellectual Property Lawyers Association. And we've got the business lawyer. That's Barrister Four here. And Ikena, thank you for being here. Encourage us to follow each other. That's one of the things I love to do. I love to network with people. So every time I host like this, I try as much as I can to follow as many people as I can follow. And we keep networking and building relationships across the digital space. So I encourage you to do that. While we're waiting for Mr. Folarin Aluko, I'd like you to, again, share this event with other people. And if you can hear me, so it doesn't look like I'm the only one here, please drop an emoji. I'd like to see an emoji from you. Your favorite emoji, by the way. You know, drop something. Let me see. Gina, all the way from South Africa, you're welcome. She's also a member of the APVA. So let's see the emoji. Am I just speaking to myself? Somebody please drop an emoji. Yeah, thank you so much, Richie. Thank you, Gracie, APVA. I am seeing that. Ozioma, welcome, 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 everybody. Thank you so much, so much. Fantastic, fantastic. All right, guys. We're still waiting for Mr. Folarin Aluko. So I'm just going to be giving you guys a prelude to the things we'll be discussing. As we all know, understanding intellectual property is very crucial, like very, very crucial for audio creators, because it really involves the protecting of our original ideas and creations from being copied or stolen. And it's very interesting for me because I really want to understand the dynamics of protecting my audio work. Like, I am coming here very bare and I have a lot of questions to ask. Questions like, who owns the right to my works as a voiceover artist? Now, that's very, very important. And if I have my podcast on other platforms, podcasting platforms, what are the, how do I say this, but to what extent do I have absolute ownership on my work versus what the platforms that I'm hosting it with have, right? I know a lot of us don't even read contracts these days, but we need to start reading contracts, and I'm sure our lawyers here would help us understand better. By the way, I've got IP Series here, IP Series podcast represented here. I mean, it's great to have you here because definitely I listen to your podcast. It talks about intellectual properties as well for the entertainment industry and for creatives generally. So Mr. Folarin Aluko is here. I'm hoping we can make him a speaker. You can please request for the mic and we'll make you a speaker and have this conversation together. So the purpose of this meeting is for us to equip ourselves with the knowledge and tools that we need to navigate the legal landscape surrounding our work confidently. And by understanding our responsibilities regarding IP, we can. Fantastic. Hello, Mr. Folarin. Nice to have you here. Can you hear me?
Am I audible?
Yes, you are. Absolutely. Can you hear me? Seems like he can't hear me. If anybody can hear me, please drop an emoji so I'll be sure that's... Oh, fantastic. APVA did drop an emoji. So, Mr. Folarin, you might have to, I don't know, reconnect or check your audio listening, audio speaking device so we'll be sure. Your mic, that is your mic. Okay, seems like it can't hear me. Okay, I'll just continue. So I was explaining that this will help us to try to mitigate risks and make informed decisions to safeguard our creative assets. Now, like I said earlier, we can ask questions about this. We can ask questions. I am not sure that Mr. Folarin is aware that he's unmuted and he cannot hear me. So I'll request Stephanie, who is at the back end for APVA, kindly send in a message to explain to him that we can't hear him. we can't hear him. All right. While we're still waiting for him to join us, you can always, you can start putting your questions down, your possible questions. I have a lot of questions to ask. For instance, I want to ask about copyright to protect audio work from the voiceover perspective and also from the podcast perspective. How do we go about that? How do we go about trademarking? What's the importance of trademarking for we that are audio creatives? And I know the conversation varies for a podcaster, you know, versus for a voiceover artist, right? So what is the whole concept of trademarking and how does it relate to our work? What of patents? How do we, you know, infuse patents into whatever we do? You know, is that a realistic thing in the voiceover industry or in the podcast world, right? So let's look at all of these things, and these are the reasons why we're here. I really love you guys to share this with other people. I'm still hoping that my guests can join, right? So yeah, Mr. Folari, we're waiting for you. While we're waiting for Mr. Folari, anybody wants to come up and say one or two things if you've ever had any issue, ever had any, you know, story to share about intellectual property issues with your audio work? I'd really love to hear it, and that can also give us some practical insights or context to some of the things we'll be discussing today. So you can just raise your hand and I'll be happy to pass the mic to you while we wait for our guests, right? So I'm waiting for him. We're waiting for him. We want to talk about all of this together. I mean, it's been an interesting day. I'm not a lawyer, else I would have started talking about all of this. You know, I'm just a voiceover artist, a podcaster. Spent my day producing voiceovers today and having meetings. So Mr. Folari's back. Thank God. Been waiting. So Mr. Folari, can you hear me? Can you unmute your mic? Let's talk. I'm waiting. Okay. Seems like he's having some issues tonight. Oh, now he's a speaker. I can't hear him. Can anybody hear him? Or it's a me problem. We cannot hear him. And this is heartbreaking. This is heartbreaking. But I'm sure he's going to find a way to join us again. So I'm thinking in my head, right? I'm just the host. I'm the guest. And I'm not a lawyer. We need lawyers here. So if you're a lawyer, I'd love you to just come up and, you know, let's talk about this together. We know you have a lot of experience in this, especially the IP series. The IP series, that's a podcast that I listen to as well. And I'm sure they've got a lot to talk about, you know, in this. So we'd love to hear about it. For those who are just joining, thank you for joining. This is Hangout with Abba. We're looking at understanding intellectual property for audio creatives. And we've got our speaker here who is the president of the Intellectual Property Lawyer Association of Nigeria, Mr. Folari Alukowu. Right now, I don't know if you can hear me, Mr. Folari. Can you say something? Kindly send him a message, Stephanie, to rejoin the meeting so we can have this. While we're doing that, I am humbly requesting IP series to please receive the mic so we can have at least a conversation about intellectual property, because that's what you're all about, right? IP series.
Okay. Let me just jump in to help. Is that okay?
That's fine, Gina. Welcome.
I'm actually going to go to a meeting in the next 15 minutes, though. Might as well just speak now. Yeah. So when it comes
Hello.
To... Oh. Can I go ahead?
Yes, Gina.
Okay, cool. So, disclaimer, I'm not a lawyer. I'm personally just managing my own brands. And I think the biggest thing is, for me, in my experience, intellectual property is your email address. If you set up your podcast or whatever platform that you have set up, for example, if you have a podcast with like RSS, for example, then your email is linked to that. And should anything happen to your podcast, everything is linked to it. So if there is a copyright flagged, that maybe somebody uploaded your podcast elsewhere without your permission, then all those platforms can, you know, do a cease and desist on your behalf. So that's how I understand it. And also just spreading it across to like maybe websites, if you have a domain name, as long as it's registered with your email, I think you have all the rights. It gets tricky though when it gets to stuff like graphics, like pictures and videos that you create, because then you can say you've created it and then somebody else can come and say, oh, I created that. And I think this is where Mr. Follerin needs to help us. So yeah, I'm done with my two cents.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you, sir.
Now I'm back to being a speaker. Can anybody hear me? Mr. Follerin, yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Great! I feel like I just won the AFCON. Shout out to everybody here, because I know that we're all Africans here. All right. Thank you for joining us. If you don't mind right now, you can mute. So I'll just try to bring people to understand why we're here for those that are just joining. So thank you very much, Mr. Follerin, for joining. And thanks to Gina, who gave something earlier as to what he thinks intellectual property means for a podcaster. I'll also bring us to the context that this, we're talking about podcasters, we're talking about voiceover artists, we're talking about spoken word artists, and we want to understand what intellectual property means for all of us, probably in our different context, and how we can use it for our, to our advantage. So again, Mr. Follerin is the president of the Intellectual Properties Lawyers Association of Nigeria, and is a friend of the house. We had a conversation last year where I was invited to speak from a voiceover artist perspective, and it was a very beautiful one. I remember we talking about the need for us to trademark our brand names. And this is something that I'll also like you to touch on. But let's start from the conversation of intellectual property itself. Tell us what it means in the general term, and tell us how this relates to audio creatives, particularly voice actors, podcasters, and spoken word artists.
Thank you very much, Tony, for that fantastic round. I guess this is a nice comeback to a very interesting conversation from last year. So, in a nutshell, intellectual property, the phrase intellectual property refers to, or is used to express an idea, and it's used to express an idea that describes property that cannot be touched or felt physically. So it distinguishes between physical property, you know, and intangible property, so property that you cannot touch, feel, hold, and physically experience. Now, the interesting thing about the phrase intellectual property, in my own perspective, is that it's one of those phrases that came about as a function of, it's used as a function of historical record or historical reference. And what this means is that somebody somewhere said, oh, this property is intellectual. And since then, we've referred to all forms of intangible property in this sense as intellectual property. But essentially, in a nutshell, it refers to the idea that in addition to physical property, that is your phone, your watch, your physical items, your plot of land, and so on that we own, human beings or people can also own a subset or a type of intangible property. Now, bringing it down specifically to the modern day, or the general meaning of intellectual property in the context that we're having this conversation, intellectual property or IP refers to the expressed work of human ingenuity. So I would say the expressions of human ingenuity. Now, ingenuity in this sense does not necessarily have anything to do with the quality or with some form of genius, but it is just the expression of the human intellect. You know, and so in that sense, because the human intellect is, that's the human mind, is not something that we can see, touch, or feel, you know, it is the expressions of the mind which can be seen, touched, and felt in the real world that the law then recognizes as intellectual property. And so, as an example I like to use, we all know the book Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe. Chinua Achebe wrote the book Things Fall Apart. Now, you and I can buy physical copies of the book, but that does not make us the authors of Things Fall Apart. You can own a physical copy of the book, the expressed copy of the book, and it was printed and it has been translated, and I think it has even been adapted into, you know, stage plays, and other forms of expression. But the book itself, the idea of the book, if you may, belongs to Mr. Chinua Achebe, the copyright in the idea of the book. So that is his intellectual property. Now, there are many other ways that, you know, we can spin this. We're all connecting through one device or the other. So some of us are using phones. When you buy a mobile phone, the physical phone itself belongs to you as the purchaser. But there's a lot of intellectual property that goes into the phone. So the software that, you know, that has been developed to make this communication possible, the circuit, the integrated circuit, the screen, you know, all that stuff, the inventions that make wireless communication possible, all those things go into the phone, and all those are intellectual property that belong to the one person or the other, or one company or the other. And so when one buys the phone, or buying a phone does not make one the inventor or the owner of those concepts or those, you know, circuits and so on. It only means that we have a right to use the phone in a particular way. So most times what third parties buy is a right to use, or a license, if you may. And there are arguments in the world around the limits of this license, whether or not when I buy a piece of software or buy a phone, I can reverse engineer the software, you know, get the source code and deal with it as I wish, you know, and so on and so forth. But in a nutshell, you know, intellectual property refers to the expressed works of the human mind, of the human intellect. And there are a lot of theories that justify the existence of intellectual property. And some of these theories are economic in nature, some of them are legal as well. But one of the legal theories that I like, the sweat of the brow philosophy. So one of the human rights theories that I like, you know, that is used as a justification for protecting intellectual property, is that every individual is entitled to the product of, you know, what their hands can do. And so, for example, a farmer who goes to the farm and plants, you know, oranges is entitled to reap the oranges and then, you know, sell the oranges, so we can exploit them, we can consume them, you can turn into orange juice, and so on and so forth. In the same way too, when an individual composes a song or writes source code or voices a character or develops a character, the individual, as a matter of right, should be entitled to the entire scope of protection of the law to determine how he or she wants to exploit that work, or exploit that character, or exploit, you know, that particular concept or idea. Now, bringing it down to audio creatives are a very interesting group of rights owners. And in this particular context, we're talking about voice artists, spoken word artists, and a group I'll refer to generally as those who record sound, so sound recorders. There are quite a number of intellectual property rights generally that exist in Nigeria today and across the world. Some of these rights are protected by law. So there's an actual law, like an act of National Assembly or law of the state that protects these rights. And then there are some rights that are protected by the courts, or what we call the common law, and the principles of equity and the law of torts. So I'll give an example. A sound recording, for example, is protected by default by copyright law. And so what this essentially means is that for one of the primary, so for example, one of the primary sources of protection for voice artists, or for voice actors, or for audio creatives is copyright law. And this is because copyright law protects works of art, expressions of art, which also include sound recordings, musical works, and other types of works that incorporate voice and audio. But then, at the same time, there are also some branch outs, if you may. So there are a voice artist, for example, would have an identity, for example. And so this goes to the conversation about trademarks. So a voice artist has a nom de plume, or has a stage name, and or is known by a name or whatever identity. That identity is protected by law of trademarks, or passing off, if you mean. So it's the law of trademarks and the law of passing off. And what the law of trademarks does is that it protects the owners of names from, it connects rather the owner of a name to the product or the service that that person offers. So it essentially tries to protect people from having their brands mistaken or misused by third parties. Whether it is the mistake or the misuse is deliberate, or it is, by chance or by mistake. So with the existence of trademark laws, you can be tickled. So Tolu can be tickled, and Tolu is tickled once he obtains the trademark right for the sobriquet T code, or the name T code. He's T code forever, and he owns it. What this also means, this reminds me it happens all the time in the music industry and in entertainment. So it reminds me of the Kiss Daniel case, for example. So the Kiss Daniel case, for example, where Kiss Daniel was signed to a label, and one of the conditions, this from what was reported in the media, one of the conditions for his signing was that the label registered the trademark for the name Kiss Daniel, K-I-S-S Daniel. And so when he left the label, one of the necessary implications was that he would have to drop the name. I don't think he and the label parted ways on good terms. So I think one of the first things the label did was to even sue him, tried to file an action challenging the use of the name. And so he had to change his name to K-I-Z-Z Daniel. And then you have, in the US, you have an artist like Prince, the late Prince, who had issues with his, I think it was Sony at the time, with the ownership of his masters, including the ownership of his brand. And so he stopped going by the name Prince and started going by the love symbol. And in fact, he actually even used the name, the artist formerly known as Prince, in protest. So trademarks can be very powerful tools for voice artists. And then, of course, you have other intellectual property rights, like patent rights. A patent right protects an inventor's inventive activity. So it protects inventions, essentially. And so you find that, I mean, T-code, for example, might, let's say, in the course of your journey as a voice artist, you might tinker with some I don't know, one of the most more popular mics these days is the SM, is it the SM55 now? But let's say you decided to tinker with, you know, with some electronic stuff here and there. You soldered some things together, joined some things together, and you designed and developed, you know, the perfect microphone. You can obtain a patent right for that and own it. And you find that in the media, this isn't uncommon. It's actually very common. So a company like Disney, for example, that produces animated movies and musical works, a company like Disney owns several patents for software and hardware as well. So it's not uncommon for people in the creative industry to also own patents, you know, for inventions. And so there are a couple of other intellectual property rights, but for the purpose of this conversation, you know, we'll take it that when talking about voice artists or audio creatives in general, the primary intellectual property right is copyright. You know, and this is because it forms the basic fountain from which most of the other rights flow. But there are a number of other things that, you know, one can unpack or discuss. And I'm sure we'll get to that in the course of this conversation. So just
to most sure that, certainly.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Folari, kindly mute so that we don't... Okay, great. Thank you so much. Wow, you said a lot of things and I have learned a lot and I also have a lot of questions. But a recap, a very short recap, is that I've learned that intellectual property means the express copy. Is that what I learned? Okay. Like when your ideas have been expressed, you know, you have the right to own them. So it's like that intellectual property, not a physical property, but an intellectual property. And he went ahead to talk about how these different IPs or the kind of laws that protect this conversation. I'm not a lawyer, guys, so please pardon me, but I'm going to explain it as a podcaster, a layman podcaster, right? So he talked about the copyright laws, he talked about common law, he talked about the law of thought, he talked about patent rights, and these are things that, you know, sort of like are there to protect us as voice of artists, podcasters, and spoken word artists. Now, the challenge I see here is that these things exist, but a lot of us are not informed or educated about them. So while, I mean, and that's why you're here, to educate us about how we can use them to our advantage. But then also to make this conversation more fruitful, because I understand how contextually this differs from a voice of artist perspective to a podcaster's perspective. And I'd like us to go straight into that because of our time. So I will start with the voice of artist, because I'm both. I'm a voice of artist, I'm a podcaster. Let's start with voice of artist. We do voiceover jobs. But then the original idea of our voiceover comes from a copywriter. And the copywriter, too, is writing for a company. So we get the scripts and we record and we're paid for the job, for the performance. We also have what we call the usage or the license fee, where we say, okay, for an entire year, this client can use my voice. If they're going to renew, if they're going to use my voice exceeding 1 year, they would renew that contract. So they pay another year's usage fee. Now, my question is very particular as to who owns the right to the voice work. do we say because we are not the originator of the scripts, we're just the voice? Do we say it belongs to the brand? Do we say it's our own entity? Or do we say since it was paid for, then it belongs to our client? So this will help us to have more context to what can we lay claim on as voiceover artists if we have issues with the client as to the usage of our voiceover. So let's start gradually from there. And then we move to podcasters, because for podcasts, I have a lot of questions as well. We create the work by ourselves, but then sometimes we collaborate. So how does intellectual property also play in terms of collaboration and, you know, other case scenarios that we can look into? So start from the voice of our artist.
Thank you, Tico. That's a very fantastic, it's a fantastic way to start. It's a fantastic question. And the answer, I think, is pretty straightforward, even though, just as you rightly highlighted, you know, things are never as straightforward as they appear. But if the question is, who owns the right to the voice work? You know, and or what does the voiceover artist own? The simple answer to that would be, the voice artist owns the his or her voice. So the voice artist owns his or her voice, which oftentimes is what we bring to the table as voice artists. Now, the conversation, of course, is obviously not as simple as that. And this is because you have several factors at play here. You rightly mentioned that there are several, in several situations or in many instances, the voice artist provides the expression or provides provides speech to the words of another person. So a copywriter has done the writing, and then the voice artist, you know, gives life to what has been written down or expressed in writing. In those situations, and this is speaking strictly, you know, by virtue of, from the point of view of what the law says, in ordinarily speaking, the person who writes a script is recognized in law as the owner of that script. And the person who voices the script is recognized as the owner of the voiced script. Now, this is assuming these two people do not know each other and they were both, you know, working independently of each other. So somebody wrote a script and then that script was taken to another person to voice. With the nature of the of voiceover transactions and the voiceover profession, if you may, you find that usually there are third parties who are pulling the strings behind the scenes. So you have perhaps maybe an agency or a client, a direct client, you know, or maybe an agency that's a client that briefs or engages a copywriter and then engages a voice artist. And in this case, you know, the connecting thread is contractual. So I would say that on a general note, you know, there's also the implication or the silent implication of the law of contract. So what this essentially means is that, and you'll find this in many IP legislations or many IP laws, oftentimes because the law recognizes that contractual sovereignty, or people have the right to determine the details of their contracts on their own, the law tries to place a default position. And so the law says, in the event that nothing is said by the parties, then this is what the position will be. And I'll give an example. The law recognizes what is called first ownership of copyright. So instead, in most situations, almost every situation, almost every, the person who owns the copyright in any work is the person who is the author, the originator, the creator. But then the law recognizes that this is just a default position. And so parties are free to contract out from this position. And so, for example, you will then see that parties may, in their contract, express a different position. So with an employer-employee, in an employer-employee relationship, for example, the law has a default position that where there's a provision in a contract of employment stating that the employer will own the copyright or will own the rights that emanate from a particular work, then that work at first instance will reside with the employer. And so what the law does there is that it provides a default position and then allows parties to contract out of that position. So the simple answer to the question, what does the voiceover artist own, is that the voiceover artist owns the voiceover. But then there's another layer to that answer, which is that the law also recognizes the freedom of the parties to contract out of this position. And this is where, your comment, I think, is very, very critical. In situations where voice artists don't understand the nature of intellectual property, then already that person is at a disadvantage when it comes to negotiating the best possible terms, for the use of their work and for the enjoyment of the use of that work. And I recall that during our earlier conversation, during our last conversation, someone mentioned the case of the person who voiced Siri, Susan Bennett, and how she had been hired to voice, to provide, to do some voice work for a particular company. And then 6 years later, in 2005, and it turned out 6 years later that her voice was then used as the original iteration of, Apple Siri, the Apple Siri voice. And of course, naturally, she didn't even have any contracts with Apple. Apple didn't pay her. I don't know if Apple has paid her, but clearly at the time, Apple didn't pay her, any fees. And so you could argue that not understanding, and I wouldn't speak to her particular situation, but it is arguable that, when a person doesn't understand the nature of intellectual property rights, it is possible that one would sell a thing or a right that should ordinarily be licensed. So it's possible for one to sell a right that should be licensed. And in some cases, you find this tends to happen a lot. So the voice artist is in a negative position from a bargaining point of view. And that's why it's important. It's not just important to understand, how important intellectual property, your intellectual property rights are. It's also important to, as much as possible, to have an IP lawyer. And I'm really happy, I'll just quickly plug this, that the IP Lawyers Association is working organizing an IP clinic for voice artists and for audio creatives, free of charge. If you are, you can check out APV Official's Twitter handle for more details, or the EPLAN NG handle for more information about that. It's holding on the 29th of February 2024, so sometime next week we'll be having a free intellectual property clinic for audio creatives. So please tell other people about it. So back to what I was saying. I was saying that he said at the end of the day, everything really comes down to, to contract. And that's why you find that in some cases, in a situation where a voice artist is hired to do a particular work and is paid a certain amount, it's always important to have that conversation, before negotiating fees, as to whether, is this a license? Am I licensing my voice to you? Or will this be a transfer arrangement? Or what is the nature? Are you hiring me as an independent contractor? Or are you hiring me as an employee? So the dynamics change. with regards to voiceover acting in the acting industry, for example, when voice actors are hired in Hollywood, oftentimes the voice actors are hired as employees, and naturally baked into the employment contract is those clauses taking away the intellectual property from that, you know, that actor. But then you find cases where, you do find them a lot, where maybe a lead actor has the opportunity to negotiate a stronger position for his or herself, you know, and this is very important. I get this question a lot. So there's this complaint. I want to respect client confidentiality, but I had a conversation with a client. He's a musician. I don't want to really release so much information, but he's a gospel artist, very popular gospel artist. And apparently he entered into an agreement with a marketer many years ago. And that agreement, as it turned out, in the agreement, he said, okay, I'm giving you copyright in my work to print CDs and to do X, Y, Z, because that was the extent to which, you know, we knew you could express or exploit musical works at the time. And then fast forward to the age of streaming, where, you know, now streaming has taken over, distribution channels are now virtually online. That particular Alaba person, that distributor, then decides to open up YouTube pages and, Instagram accounts. No, not Instagram. He opened up Spotify accounts for this particular artist's work, you know, and started to monetize, or wanted to monetize the artist's work. And when the artist raised issues, he brought out that old agreement. You know, that's an interesting situation. But the good thing, I mean, the fortunate thing was that those earlier contracts, which I should say I was not privy to, the artist wasn't my client at the time, those earlier contracts did not capture, you know, new technology. It didn't capture streaming, it didn't capture new forms of technology, thankfully. And they were quite limited in the scope of the draft. So imagine a situation like that. Hmm. And you find creators who don't understand the value of their IP falling into, you know, that sort of trap. So I would say the short answer to your question is the voice artist owns his or her voice, but in the long term, the real question comes down to your ability to negotiate or to understand what is on the table, you know, and negotiate a position for yourself that will make sense to you.
Okay. Wow, thank you so much, Mr. Folarin. It's been a very interesting discourse here. We're talking about understanding intellectual property for audio creatives. And Mr. Folarin, who is the president of the Intellectual Property Lawyers Association of Nigeria, just took us through answering a question that has to do with voice actors. And the question basically was, who owns the rights to the voiceover work? Is it the voice actor? Is it the client that pays for the job? Or is it even the copywriter? And from all that, you've just said, I would like to sort of like make it as simple as I can explain it. I think what you're trying to say is that the voice actor owns the work, the voice work. However, by the going of the contract, it is then, you know, stated there what the negotiation is. If the voice actor is licensing his voice, for what amount and for how long that licensing will, you know, be valid. And that then takes us to the usage fee, which is something that I wish all voice actors over here knew about, but it's still something we're trying to grasp or grapple with. So just to add a bit more context for voice actors that are listening before we head on to to podcasters, you know, as a voice actor, you are hired to do a job, there should be a negotiation. Now, negotiation is not just for you collecting money for what you are doing. What you are doing is called a performance. So you are collecting a performance fee. However, there is the usage side of it, which is how long is what you are doing going to be used by the client? You are licensing it to be used for a year. After a year, the client has no right to use your voice on air. You can say, I want to transfer ownership of this voice work to the client. Now, that's the one we call in perpetuity, you know, or full buyout. Those are the terminologies legally that they use to address such situations. So I think I'm just trying to marry this that Mr. Folari has given to us, all of the things he has given to us, to the lingua of voice of artists so that we can better comprehend his response. And I hope I'm very correct, Mr. Folari. Can you just attest to that?
Your translation was perfect. Yes, you're very correct.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay, moving on. I know that we're running out of time. However, I would still love people to contribute. I want to go straight to the next question, and this relates to podcasters. Now in my head, I'm wondering, where do I tie in spoken word artists? I think the voiceover thing also relates to them, but don't worry, I'm going to think about that. So for podcasters, right, I'm a podcaster as well, and I want to believe aggressively that my podcast, everything I do on my podcast is my work, is my right. Although there are some crossovers where, you know, we can talk about getting to use a music on or a soundtrack on your podcast, which in clear terms, everybody should know that there are some copyrighted soundtracks and there are some that are free to use. So that should not be so much of an issue right now. What I want us to look at is a situation where, as a podcaster, first of all, you are going to confirm if I am correct that I own the rights to my podcast, regardless of if I am putting it on other streaming platforms. I'd like you to touch on that first. Then I'd also like you to touch on the idea that I have guests or I have co-podcasters or I am collaborating with another podcaster. And help me to understand then where the rights for this, for the audio work, you know, lies. Is it with me? Because there are situations where, of course, you have a guest. Now, does the guest have a right to say, it's my voice, put that thing down? Or the moment you are on my podcast, it, whether you like it or not, it is my my property and I can put it out however I want to? Or should there be a contract that podcasters and their guests can agree on and say, okay, this is how far you can use my work? I'm aware that stuff like that exists, but as the professional, I'd like you to shed some light on that. And if possible, because of our time, you know, you can always take it as swiftly as possible. So there goes the questions.
Thank you very much, Tikud. Fantastic question again. The simple answer to your question is that, yes, the podcaster owns the right to the podcast. And, you know, I would say that a podcast is not usually just one thing. Just as you rightly mentioned, a podcast may be a combination of music and voice, you know, and or other sounds. And so the ultimate ownership of what you make of the podcast itself, if it were to be one thing, may depend on a number of several factors, but primarily, if it is a podcast featuring one person's voice with one person talking, then of course it belongs to that person. Now there are several commas and several other conditions, and I would say for starters, the law recognizes that you can have joint ownership of intellectual property in the same way that you and I can own a plot of land in Maitama or in on Banana Island, for example. So two people can own a plot of land, two people can own a mobile phone, two people can own a single property in the same way that two creators or two people who our co-creators can own, you know, a podcast or can own a joint work. So you can have two authors who own a book and so on and so forth, two writers to a song, or more, right, two or more. And so I would say that because joint ownership, the law recognizes joint ownership, and in some cases, the default position is that all the joint owners own the work to the same degree in the absence of any contractual provisions or contractual negotiations. The best practice and what tends to happen professionally in most situations is that podcasters, or if you're bringing somebody on your podcast, either as a co-host, which may be co-host / employee or co-host / co-creator, there is an agreement that recognizes the role that that person plays and also recognizes its effect on that person's ownership of the ultimate product. And this is assuming that you don't use any other third-party work. So let's say there's no music, no third-party music on the podcast. So what tends to happen is if you're going to bring on a guest, it's always good to have a release contract or some kind of agreement. Now, there are several laws that play out in different jurisdictions, in different places. And I think this is one of the ways that, you know, new technology or new media is redefining or is changing or is challenging our existing laws. And I'll give an example. There are some states in the US, for example, and there are some countries where you would require a person's permission to take their photos or record them on video. And so in those jurisdictions, for example, if someone were to tell you after a podcast, look, I don't want my video, I don't want my face shown, you know, there's that question of, okay, you might start having the argument, oh, was there consent? So those are third-party consent jurisdictions. You could argue that, okay, the person gave consent, you know, up until a particular time and then withdrew that consent. But in those places, you have privacy laws that also play a major role in determining, you know, how IP works. So in those jurisdictions, you can't have a guest, you know, for example, on a podcast saying, oh, I don't want this particular section, you know, to be aired. But generally speaking, we don't have such laws in Nigeria. The recent privacy, I think it's Data Protection Act. So I have my own ideas about how that act works. But there's definitely a need for new laws or laws that address these issues. In the absence of such laws, then what operates by default is the contract and the agreement of the parties. So to answer your question, I would say that a lot centers around how the parties can, to that pod, how the podcast host and his or her guests, you know, can negotiate the best possible conditions, if you may. So in terms of who owns the podcast, naturally, the recording at the end of the podcast belongs to, you know, the podcaster. And if he or she has other guests, those guests would ordinarily be treated without any contractual provision, would probably be treated by the law as co-creators. And so a lot depends on the context, but I think I just tried to lay out what the general lay or scope of it is.
Okay. So, Mr. Folari, I need to really get something quickly before we move on to the next thing. Your last statement says there is no contractual agreement binding when a podcaster has a guest on his or her podcast. The person is treated, the guest is treated as a co-creator. Now, if you say the person is treated as a co-creator, it suggests to me, or does that actually suggest that they both co-own the rights to the episode in question? Is that what it means? And if that is what it means, if there is a situation where there needs to be some monetization in effect, does that also mean that both parties, or however many they are eligible to profiting from, you know, the monetization proceeds of that episode?
Okay, so again, I'm trying to provide, you know, and this is a fantastic, there's a lot of nuance to this conversation. There's a lot of nuance. And I try to say that, okay, in a situation where there's no contract, I said the law may treat the guest as a co-creator. Now, contracts may be in writing or may be verbal. The law recognizes the strength and the validity of a verbal contract. So, you know, it will now fall to, so the parties could have decided that, okay, so in reality, we're just bringing you in as a, you're coming in as a guest, you know, to this podcast and not as a co-creator. So let's say in a promotional situation, for example, I'm trying to look for a very good example, you know, but there are circumstances under which the guest may come in for promotional purposes or for marketing purposes. And unfortunately, the parties did not reduce anything to writing. So there's no clause that talks about how the intellectual property, you know, is split or broken up. In those cases, you still have a contract, but then there are some legal conditions. So, for example, the law provides that any assignment of copy of, you know, copywriting in a work must be in writing. So it must be contained, must be written down. So before you can have a full transfer of copyright, it must be in writing. There must be something in writing, you know, to that effect. And so I would say that if, to be 100% safe, if you as a podcaster have a guest on an episode and you want to own the entire, you know, the rights to the entire to the episode, or you want to own the rights to the episode, you should have a release contract or a release form or a release agreement signed with your guest, you know, stating to that effect, stating that the copyright resides with you or in you or in your company or whoever. Now, in a situation where the guest comes in on an episode and is not a part of the full show, because again, podcasts are a podcast is a production, you know, and so the guest will play a role that might span, you know, just one section of the episode or the entire episode. You know, and so all these are all factors that will be taken into consideration. And so, as a podcaster, you can decide, let's say the guest comes in on a particular segment, you could decide as a podcaster to take that segment out, you know, or and so on and so forth, you know, to use it in whatever particular way based on the existence of any prior arrangement or negotiation with the guest. In my opinion, and to round up, in the absence of any express, if you haven't, as a podcaster, as whoever it is, the producer, let's use the producer, because the podcaster, many podcasters self-produce. So if the producer of that show has not had, you know, an express discussion with the guest, in my very honest opinion, and we had a debate about this in the association about third parties who are part of content creation, the law sees them as joint owners. And so the guest should ordinarily be treated as a joint owner. And what this means is that in the event that the content is monetized, then that guest is entitled to something. And I will say that you'll find, I've looked at, you know, several of these agreements, you find many of these agreements in other parts of the world actually capture some sort of payment upfront or outright payment to the guest. So the guest gets something. And then the podcaster then goes on to monetize. Vlad, DJ Vlad of Vlad TV, is a very good example for this. So Vlad sometimes pays his guests, the guests who come on the show, he sometimes pays them, but then he also gives them the option of sharing revenue. And in this, in those situations, it then depends on whether that piece of content will go viral or not. If it goes viral and is monetized, then everybody shares, you know, from the profits or the proceeds. But if you choose to take your money up front, you know, to get paid for the interview and you pay them, the agreements will reflect that you don't get a share of the proceeds.
Thank you so much, Mr. Folarin, kindly made. Okay, thank you. So this is very eye-opening, and I believe that a lot of us are learning from all that we've been listening to from Mr. Folarin. Very important, I have to state it expressly in summary. What he's saying is that if you don't come up with a contract or an agreement with your guest on your podcast, in the case where you'll be monetizing your podcast, whatever revenue that you're making from that episode, the guest who is assumed or the lessee as a co-creator is also licensed, or what's the word now, is due to also receive part of the revenue. And you want to say something, Mr. Folarin?
The person is entitled to.
Yeah, that's the word. Thank you. You're a lawyer. So the person is entitled to the revenue. Now, that's very interesting because, I mean, in Africa, it's a very interesting case. Why am I saying that? I don't know which podcaster has their podcast, you know, in Africa. Not the one that they opened with VPN in another country, but in Africa, monetized. I don't know. But there are other ways to go about monetization. I don't want us to go into that, you know, rabbit hole of talking about monetization and all of that. And it's something I hope that we can address maybe some other time. Because a lot of us started podcasting and we just, you know, innocently bring guests to our podcast without any form of contract, and they also innocently just say stuff. And I'm looking at this thing in 10 years' time, you never know, tomorrow, in a decade or two, that podcast now becomes a very big stuff, something to reference, and is able to generate a lot of income. And then we may start having issues where guests are saying, I deserve some cut from this. But we will look at that some other time. Maybe in the law clinic, we can address this, or further meetings that we'll be having with IPLAN. So thank you. Okay, you want to say something? Please go on.
I said perfect, but the good thing is that, and we can look at it in some more detail, but the good thing is that, you know, a contract can always be entered into at any point in time. So it's always better late than never, you know. And so with regards to the specific nuances, you know, we can have those conversations, but just as you rightly said, if one finds oneself in such a situation, it does help to try and revisit those conversations. And the good thing is that you don't necessarily need to have a different agreement for every episode. You know, you can have a pro forma type of release form or release agreement that new guests will just quickly sign, and you're good to go.
Okay, so I think moving forward, so that we can move forward, APVA and IPLAN, we still need to have some roundtable discuss. I'm probably come up with contract templates for people who are going to be having guests, and also people who have already had guests in the past, so that this can be used to enter into contracts with them, so that we go know the people where they follow drag share tomorrow, say okay, now I will share with this and stuff like that. But that's on a lighter note. Thank you for giving that emoji that you agree. I have one more question, because I mean I have a lot of them, but this will be the last one I'll be asking before I let other people ask. And by the way, if you have a question for Mr. Folari or a contribution, you can either pen them down, put them in the comments, or you can request the mic and we'll let you ask your question. Now, this last question is going to sort of encapsulate the other things we're supposed to touch on. Now, let me take you back to when you were using me as an example, when I was asking about voiceover artists. And then you said T-Code is the name I use for my work. Now, if I would go on to make that name, what's the word now? There's a word to protect the name. That just zapped out of my head right now. So if I go on to trademark the name, it means that I have exclusive license to use the name. Now, I would like you to touch on things like trademarking and patenting. Not because I just want you to talk about them and educate us, but I want us to talk about actions. Now, we are going to not just having the knowledge, but taking actions. What are the steps? What are the things that we need to do to protect our intellectual property? So talk to me as an audio creative, and you're looking at me like there is danger if you don't do this. You need to do this. For instance, you need to trademark your name. Okay, as a voiceover artist, you need to create a contract. As a podcaster, you need to create a contract. This is where patency plays a role. Else, you're going to be cheated. Royalties. Like, let's talk about the practicalities. Every one of us listening, we are audio creatives. What are the next steps we can take to protect our audio works?
Tiku, your questions are always very pregnant. And I think, so the first thing is to note is that as an audio creative, every creative or creator, especially in the digital economy, has their, you can say there are two aspects to creators in today's world. The first aspect is, of course, the work they create. And the second aspect is the persona of the creator. And these two aspects, in my opinion, are property, or they are proprietary in nature. So, and this is because, you know, technology and social media has created an influencer economy that allows creators to also function or work as influencers. And it hasn't always been this way. So there are two sides to this coin. And so I would say that, you know, number one, the first thing that every voice or audio creator or creative should note is that your work is your intellectual property. It's your property. You are creating something. And so as a result of the fact that you're creating something, we should recognize that our laws protect, you know, your creation. That's number one. In the context of audio works, there's this big argument in some quarters about whether registration should be encouraged or not. I always like to err on the side of registration. And so, for example, with regards to any work protected by copyright, what the law recognizes is that the law states that you don't need registration for a work to enjoy copyright, for it to be validly protected by copyright. You know, when it comes to intellectual property, of course, most times issues will arise when there are disputes. And that's often when the question of registration or non-registration becomes, you know, a plus or a minus, becomes, you know, relevant, always a plus. So I would say that the first things first, as an audio creative, the first thing to note is that your work can be, your work is protected as intellectual property. And so you should always have a system in place. Now, Tikud, your question is a little complex because I try to advise clients to build systems around, you know, to treat themselves as products. So let me give a very practical example. So for example, you have Tikud. Tikud is you are a voice actor, you're a podcaster, you know, you're everything and all of that. And but at the same time, you also create stuff. So you have Tikud's persona and then Tikud's work, things that Tikud creates. So the first thing I would advise, for example, is that you should register a company. And this is because individuals and human beings, we have a very definite lifespan. But companies don't have a lifespan. And so I'll advise register a company first, and then, you know, that company can be your vehicle for holding your intellectual property. So when you create IP, you assign it to the company and then let the company deal with it. And what that tends to do, I was looking at some numbers this evening for one of these a very popular hip hop company in Nigeria, and I saw that, you know, there's a way that they do their licensing with a UK subsidiary. But back to Nigeria. So we say, so Tikud is put on a salary that comes from income generated from the exploitation of his IP and also from the exploitation of his persona. That income goes to the company, and then the company then distributes. And the company is set up in a particular kind of way that you can also raise revenue through equity, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the point is that we already recognize that Tikud's persona, you know, is different from Tikud. So you have to register the trademark for that persona. And the reason why you're registering a trademark is not necessarily to stop others from using it, but it's actually to protect your investment in that brand. So you have a brand Tikud _70, and you have invested a lot of money, you've done adverts, invested a lot of time and all that in that brand. You should be entitled, secure that investment, the money that has already gone into developing that brand. You know, and so you have to register that, you know, that trademark and protect that name. And so that's in a nutshell, I would say that all audio creatives, in my opinion, should think about themselves as products, and also consider the fact that we also create products as well. I mean, this is, in my opinion, one of the most efficient ways to what's that word now? To monetize or to exploit, you know, the IP that you create. And so you can then start talking about endorsements, merchandise, brand ambassadorships, and so on. There has been a conversation about this very recently. I think the Registrar General of the Corporate Affairs Commission said something about content creators that seems to have, you know, I don't know if he said it inadvertently, or, you know, if you actually understood what he was saying, but it goes to the root of this question. So how do you protect your intellectual property rights? Without being facetious, you forgive me, I'll say one of the first things that you should do is you should talk to an intellectual property lawyer. And the reason is that, you know, there's only so much we can have in terms of a conversation about intellectual property that will capture all the nuances and the technicalities of IP transactions. But it does help, and understanding these concepts can be the difference between earning 0 naira and maybe earning 100 million naira. I have a client who, for example, but he's not, he's a painter. He's a fine art painter. And somebody used a couple of his paintings. A bank MD used a couple of his paintings in a book, in an autobiography, and was paid, I think, about 8 figures for the use of those paintings. The man reproduced them, the paintings of some parts of Lagos State. And he reproduced them, and he was paid a very huge sum of money. Now, if this gentleman, you know, everything boils down to your ability to negotiate that contract, really boils down to your understanding, the basic understanding of intellectual property. However, having an IP lawyer will make a huge impact on your ultimate ability to negotiate. And this is because, you know, there's a lot of value that the IP lawyer brings. So I will say, number one, you should have an IP lawyer. And again, just to plug the IP clinic, if you are, I saw somewhere someone was saying, I don't need a lawyer, I don't need an IP lawyer. You know, but if you would like to find out, you know, what you're missing, I would encourage you to sign up for the IP clinic that IPLAN is holding in conjunction and partnership with APBA, that comes up on the 29th of February. So sometime next week, I would encourage you to sign up, and then we can have much more detailed conversations, you can have much more detailed conversations about some of the challenges that you're facing. But I can assure you, the first thing that you should do is get an IP lawyer. You know, but then let's say you don't have an IP lawyer and you're looking for things that you can implement or integrate into your operations. I would say, number one, you have to get an agreement. You must get an agreement and document everything. And then two, recognize that you are a creator, but at the same time, your personality or your persona is also proprietary in nature. So it is property that you can also trade with. And so you have to register that that name or your whatever alias you use. And I should quickly mention that of all the intellectual property rights, it is only trademarks. Trademarks can be renewed, forever. Trademarks don't die. If they are, when renewed, they can be renewed ad infinitum. Copyright has a definite lifespan, so do patents, and so do industrial design. So I think this would be my advice to audio creatives.
Wow. Thank you so much, Mr. Folari. You've really been very resourceful tonight. We've taken your time, actually, and we really do appreciate that as well. And thanks to everybody that has been here listening, patiently, as if you're in a law class, right? And just, enjoying all the things that have been said. So we know what we need to do now. Get an agreement for perhaps every kind of activity that you're going to be doing with your audio work that has to do with somebody else, right? So have an agreement, document everything, and also register your name or your brand or your company. These are the things that needs to be registered, and also maybe trademarked, not even maybe. We will learn more about that at the Intellectual Property Clinic, which will be happening on the 29th of February. That's on Thursday. That's next week, Thursday. So I'd really love us all to be there. You can find more details about it on our page, or you can also check in on our website. That's apva.africa. We'd really love to have everybody here so we can continue the learning as our... Mr. Folari, you want to say something, sir?
No, I was just going to say, tell a friend about the IP clinic.
Yeah, absolutely. For those who are wondering how they can be a part of it, you can check the link on our bio. There's a form there. Fill the form, and right away, we save your seat. So we'd love to see you there. All right. At this point, I don't want to talk anymore. I just want to take questions and responses or comments. So if you have something to say, this will be a good time to raise your hand. We'll pass you the mic and you state your point. Or you can as well just request the mic. And once we see that, we'll make you a speaker. So if you have anything to say right now, please do. I see IP series here, and thank you, goodness me, you've been here so far. I wanted you to speak at the beginning, but then Mr. Falari was able to, you know, sort out the connection issues. But now you're still here, and, you know, we could hear one or two things, commentaries or something from you as regards intellectual property, because you have a podcast that's centered around that. So while we wait for listeners to turn speakers and ask a question or two, do you have anything to add to what has been said so far? Okay, it's looking like the IP series host is currently unable to speak. Anyways, I'm still hoping to have anybody ask any question, either it's voiceover related, podcast related, for spoken word artists. You are able to ask your questions now. And by the way, Mr. Falari, just a side, not on a serious note now, but just a side. So the way we have you on this Twitter space, right, you are our guests. And let's just say that one way or the other, this conversation can be monetized. Does that also mean from all that we've been saying that you are eligible to take proceeds from whatever money we make, if we are going to be making? I'm just saying, right? Because this was not, we didn't enter into an agreement that this would be a podcast. It's just we having you as a guest to speak on something. But then if this were going to be monetized, does that mean that you have the right to say, hey guys, you're monetizing this, and I will be taking this? Just aside, just I want to comment. And
my plan is to send my account details after this conversation. But yes, you know, the interesting thing is podcasts are podcasts today. I remember when I always thought the word podcast was a very funny, was funny. Unfortunately, I think I am fairly aware of when, you know, the word entered into like public domain. And so it was somebody, well, broadcasting from a pod or from, you know, a small space, and some kind of personal broadcast. So, but in the world that we live in today, you can create, you can turn one thing into anything. You can take one type of content and use AI to create matching visuals, or do animation that creates visuals, and then you put it somewhere, you go to YouTube, monetize it. We're talking the other day about Facebook and how Facebook has blocked monetization, you know, for Nigerian content. But you know, you could take it to Facebook and monetize it there, you know, or you know, anywhere else. And you have old content being repurposed for a new audience or new media. So I think that time is ripe for these conversations. Like I said, I actually have worked on one or two live cases where we had people who had discussed, they had dealt with their IP, you know, during the analog era. And then now you have a whole new lease of life with, you know, with streaming, digital distribution, you know, and so on and so forth. And they're realizing that, oh, the agreements that we made back then, you know, there might still be space to sneak in digital as well. And lawyers, in some of these agreements, you find lawyers saying things like, can be exploited through broadcast, DTA, satellite, blah, 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 and any other means known, now known, or to be known in the future, you know, just in a bid to capture every possible scenario. But you know, some way, somehow, there's always a I mean, technology is providing new ways to exploit old content. And so, because we didn't sign any contracts, we don't have any release forms, my answer to your question is yes. If in 20 years' time, I learned that APVA has monetized this content, I'll still be sending my account details in 20 years.
Okay, Mr. Folari. And I would also exchange the gesture, because I also was on an event organized by so I'll also be sending my account number, you know. Okay, guys, so I was just saying that at this point, I'm unsure if anybody still has a question. I've been waiting to see if we have questions from the audience, but it seems like we understand to a very large extent the things that has been said by Mr. Folari Aluko, who is the president of the Intellectual Properties Lawyers Association of Nigeria, also the past chairman of MBA Abuja chapter. And he has been gracious enough to, you know, give us this time to talk about intellectual property, understanding intellectual property for audio creatives. So far, we've delved into what IP, intellectual property, means for voiceover artists, who has the ownership of the voice work. Is it the clients? Is it the voice of artists? Is it the copywriter? Is it the agency? And he has dealt with that very well. We also talked about podcasters, especially podcasters who have guests on their podcasts, and also co-creators like fellow podcasters or co-hosts, you know, who owns the right to the work. And in case of monetization, where does the proceeds go? How is it being, you know, arranged? So he spoke about that as well. And then we talked about trademarking, intellectual property, patents, and so many other things like that. And he has done graciously to explain many of these things to us. Now, I need to remind you that you can learn more in the forthcoming IP clinic, intellectual property clinic, coming up on Thursday next week. That's the 29th of February, 2024. And I can assure you that Mr. Folari Aluko, alongside a host of other incredible lawyers in Nigeria, will be helping us understand better intellectual property. Still, I don't think, I'm not sure that anybody here has a question to ask. So at this point, I would like to say a very big thank you to Mr. Folari Aluko for his time, as well as every person that is here. Can we just give ourselves a round of applause and splash the screens with emojis to show that you really, really, really enjoy this. And also in a way to say thank you for to APVA and to ePlan for making this possible. I want to see an emoji from everybody. If you're listening to me now, drop an emoji. Thank you very much. I like what I'm saying. Great, great, great. All right, guys, this brings us to the end of the conversation. But before I go, Mr. Folari, in case you have any parting words, anything you've not said you'd like to say right now, let's have it, and then we can call this a wrap. It's your turn to speak now.
I'd like to say thank you to APVA for having me. It's been a very interesting conversation. The time seems to have gone so quickly. And I would also like to encourage as many of us who are creators to come on the clinic. We'll have a much longer time to have detailed discussions. So the clinic provides lawyers or creators, audio creatives, with access to lawyers on a one-on-one consultancy basis, and it's free of charge. At the moment, we actually have over 200 lawyers who are part of the clinic and who are ready to serve, you know, provide legal advice to creatives from across the world. So I would encourage you, as we would say in the local parlance, you know, food is ready, come and eat. So I would encourage you to sign up, take advantage of this opportunity, and then let's see where it goes. So thank you to APVA. Thank you very much, Tico, for a very interesting conversation. Thank you to everyone who has, you know, joined the conversation and stayed till this point. Do enjoy the rest of the weekend.
And thank you to Sir Mr. Folari Aluko. And thanks to IPLAN, that's the Intellectual Properties Lawyers Association of Nigeria. And for those who are wondering how they can be a beneficiary of the free consultation with IPLAN. That's next week, Thursday, at the Intellectual Property Clinic. All you have to do is go to our bio. There's a link on our bio. When you click the link, it takes you to a form. You fill the form and you already have a seat booked for you for next week, Thursday, with IPLAN. And we'll be giving you, communicating other details to you as you register, like the time and the venue and all of that. It's been a great conversation here, and I am so happy to have been able to do this. I want you to know that you can listen to this conversation all over again in case you missed out. It's going to be readily available on Twitter or X right here, so you can listen again. It's been a great time hosting this conversation. My name is Tolu Lopekolade. You can call me T-Code, a voiceover artist, a podcaster, the host of the Everything Voiceover podcast, and the creative partner at APVA. I look forward to the next time we'll be having another conversation like this. In the meantime, always follow us on all our social media platforms if you're not following us. And please ensure to follow each other here on this platform so you can connect with other creators. And who knows, maybe a lawyer as well, and you can get talking. Follow us on other platforms. On Twitter, we exist right here. We also exist on Instagram. We exist on WhatsApp. We have a community for audio creatives, in case you don't know. I'm talking about the African Association of Podcasters and Voice Artists. Would love to help you. Would love to spotlight what you do. Would love to help answer your questions and provide free resources for you readily available to help scale your voiceover, your podcast, or your spoken word career to the next level. So thank you for being a part of this, and I'll see you in the next episode of Hangout with Abva. All right, guys. At this point, we can drop emojis as we will be closing the meeting in the next 1 minute. If you're a speaker, of course, we're just three speakers, so nobody can speak again. APVA, you want to say something? Or it's bye-byes. We can just drop bye-byes emojis if there's anything like that. Thank you, guys. It's been a great time talking. Bye. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the episode. Become a member of ABVA today. Visit abva.africa to learn more.